This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie, in for David Martin Davies. And I'm going to start off this show by reading a bit from a piece written by one of our guests, Sarah Klein, a reporter from the San Antonio Express News. It starts by saying a photograph of a kitchen in disarray flashed on the city council screen. Trash and paper overflowed from dozens of stacked boxes. The counters, table, and windowsill were covered with piles of clutter. Plastic bags and cardboard were shoved into the space between the wall and the fridge that could not close. What Sarah's describing there is the home of what popular culture knows as a hoarder, but people in the mental health community would call the owner of that home a person with hoarding disorder. Now, we do have an expert on that subject on the show with us today as well. Dr. Carolyn Rodriguez is the director of the Hoarding Disorders Research Program and an associate professor and associate chair of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford University. And I thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
All right. Let's talk, Sarah, a little bit about that piece that you wrote a couple months ago. It was a city council meeting about a situation that has become sort of lethal in San Antonio over the last year.
Yeah. I mean, so the fire chief presented it, but the thing that I think really shocked people wasn't just the photo. It was that at that point, they had had four fire fatalities, and they all had some sort of hoarding involved in it. So, I mean, that's 100% of the fatalities so far in San Antonio this year all have hoarding. And It's been a problem in the past, the fire department has said, and so now they're trying to figure out how to prevent it before they have to go in and fight a fire or battle that blaze.
So they're trying to put together a task force.
Yes, yeah.
And they hope to identify people who may have hoarding tendencies.
And something that they're still working on the task force, the last time I spoke to them, and they want to have it up and running by 2020. But something that they really were pushing was that it's not just the fire department doing it, it's a team effort. Because you have to not only identify these people and who they are, but also get them help. So, you know, and I'm sure the expert can speak more about it, but there's other task force around the country, and it's the fire department, it's social workers, it's police, it's a whole array of different departments.
Okay, Dr. Rodriguez, the expert, tell me about it. What is hoarding disorder?
So hoarding disorder is characterized as having really persistent difficulty parting with your possessions, and that results in clutter that impairs your ability to actually live do your normal activities of daily living. It's difficult to sleep on your bed because there's so many things on it. You can't cook in the kitchen because there are too many items. And it's not due to having a medical condition. So, for example, if somebody had leg or arm broken or is in an injury and clutter accumulates, that wouldn't be considered hoarding disorder. And similarly, it wouldn't be due to another mental disorder, like, for example, in schizophrenia, where you have hearing voices to not go outside, then maybe things can accumulate. So it's really due to that difficulty parting with possessions. That's really the key to it.
So I have difficulty parting with possessions and cannot use my dining room table because it's covered with stuff. But that's not the same, right?
Exactly. So all of us actually have the same brain machinery within us to keep things. So we keep things either because it's something emotional or reminds us of a loved one or happy times, or we keep an item because it's just beautiful, sort of inherent aesthetic value. And third, it's just useful. It might come in handy. I don't want to let go of this because I might use it later. So all of us have those reasons for keeping things, but individuals with hoarding disorder have an exponential, great degree of difficulty and may have all three of those things when thinking of an object.
My dad, who I think would have eventually gone on to what we would call someone with hoarding disorder, used to say, you don't have to buy what you already own. And I think maybe that's how some of these situations start. But is there some sort of underpinning mechanism in the brain that sort of makes it go from, you know, practical advice, you don't have to buy what you already own, to having, say, 30 cats?
Right. So, well, We're just at the beginning of understanding what hoarding disorder is. It was first described in the 1990s by Randy Frost, who's a professor at Smith College, has written extensively in this area. And although hoarding has been described in the literature quite extensively for a period of time, he was really the person who gave a name to this. And for a long time, hoarding symptoms were thought to be part of obsessive-compulsive disorder, where people have intrusive thoughts and have repetitive behaviors that decrease the anxiety generated by those thoughts. But recently, 2013, with the new version of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, hoarding disorder actually became its own disorder because people recognized that it was very different from OCD and had different underpinnings. Now, because it's so new, we know a few things about the underlying brain mechanisms, but we're really just at the tip of the iceberg. One researcher, David Tolan, did brain imaging of individuals who had hoarding disorder and asked them in the scanner to discard things that belonged to themselves and things that belonged to other people, the investigators. And what they found was when they were asked to discard things of other people, this area in the brain decreased, but when they discarded their own, this region in the brain increased a lot. And so there was a switch in the brain, and the authors think that this stimulation is goes along with all those reasons we described of why we keep things.
All right. We would like you to join the conversation. If you'd like to, give us a call, 210-614-8980. Do you have an experience with hoarding in your own life? Tell us about it. Give us your perspective. You can also email the source at tpr.org or tweet us at TPR source, and you can be anonymous if you'd like. So, Dr. Rodriguez, is there any idea at this point what may cause that anxiety that shows up on a brain scan? That it seems like an inordinate attachment to objects that belong to you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that there are a lot of different reasons that for different people that could be.
Yes, exactly. And again, we're just at the tip of the iceberg. So our group and other groups are examining what that means, what makes up those, that attachment. What we also know about hoarding disorder is that people can have attentional problems, difficulty organizing and categorizing items. So those things may contribute to some of the difficulty as well. And I think the attachment piece is really where there can start to be a divide in families where family members just don't understand. When they look at the objects, they're like, you could very easily part with this. But to somebody with hoarding disorder, it actually looks like each item they have such an intense appreciation for, of the color, the shape, the memory of it, that it's almost like being in a museum. And so it's really, you start to see a change when we go for our research studies into patients' home and ask them, with awe and wonder, tell us about your items.
All right.
And they're surprised. This is the first time somebody has actually thought of their items in that way.
We'll talk more about this and when it becomes dangerous to not only the person living in the house, but the people around the house. Straight ahead, we'd like to hear from you too. Give us a call at 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. The Source continues right after this break. You are listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie, in for David Martin Davies, and we are talking about hoarding or hoarding disorder, and we'd like to hear from you, your thoughts on it, your experiences with it. Give us a call at 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org or tweet us at @tprsource. And we do have an email from Brendan who asks, is this issue something that is typically focused on a particular demographic of people? Interestingly, Sarah Klein, who's one of our guests, was curious to ask you, Dr. Rodriguez, the same question. Do do certain kinds of people tend to have this disorder more often?
So, well, I would say, first of all, hoarding disorder is quite common. It's estimated around 2 to 6% of the population suffer from hoarding disorder, and it does appear to affect men and women at similar rates. And it has been reported in all races, ethnicities, and cultures around the world. But hoarding disorder does appear to be three times more common in older adults, those ages 55 to 94, compared to younger adults, so ages 34 to 44, although hoarding symptoms can occur in children as well.
So I was looking at, I did some research before the show, and there's some research from 2010 that suggests that there are four hoarder profiles, but it seems like understanding of the subject is changing so quickly that that may have changed. But what I read was Good Samaritan, a disabled or elderly person, a cruel or neglectful person, or a true hoarder. Do those models still exist as this changes?
Dr. Randy Frost, when he first described the disorder, he postulated a cognitive behavioral therapy model, and his book, along with David Tolan, there's a Buried in Treasures manual, and it actually goes through some, I think what you're highlighting is that the reasons why people hold on to items may be different, and it behooves them to read and understand a little bit more about what are the reinforcing properties, what rewards them in getting these items. So, for example, for one person, it may be they get a high when they find a sale, and it just makes them feel so happy, and they want to bring those items home and then send them off to their loved ones. But somewhere along the way, in terms of disorganization or attention, or that difficulty parting with possessions, they don't end up actually sending those sale items out. And so it becomes part of the clutter.
All right. That's Dr. Carolyn Rodriguez there. She's the director of the Hoarding Disorders Research Program and an associate professor and associate chair of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford University. We got an email from Renee who asks, are certain items more commonly hoarded than others? Dr. Rodriguez?
Yes. So I, you know, certainly in terms of, you know, the types of items that are hoarded, newspapers tend to be something that is used, that is kept frequently. For those individuals, oftentimes it's, you know, not wanting to lose a piece of information that is in there, but a lot of other things can be collected too. Boxes and toilet paper rolls, even I've seen. So the amount varies, but I would say newspapers are among the most common.
All right, so that was an email question from Renee. You also can email if you'd like at thesource@tpr.org, or you can call us at 210-614-8980 or tweet us at TPR Source. So, Sarah, you covered the initial announcement that they were seeking to put together this task force. And the fire department at the time described some of the situations that they found themselves in this year. And it's all in 2019, correct?
Yeah. I mean, they specifically, there was one fatality that they brought up where there was a man trapped inside. And the chief after the man died, and the chief after, he basically said, you know, this shows the dangers of hoarding. There were boxes and stacks of things, and there was also burglar bars on the windows, but basically the firefighters just could not get in and the man was trapped. So, I mean, you don't only see it with the fire department either. I was saying this before the break, but even EMS, when they go in to try and help someone, sometimes they can't bring in a stretcher or a wheelchair because they can't push through all of the clutter, or they have to move the clutter, which then slows down the whole process if there's an emergency.
In the picture included with your piece, there was a lot of boxes. Dr. Rodriguez just described lots of newspapers.
Yeah.
And that stuff, you know, that's highly flammable stuff, too.
Right.
Did the fire department touch on that at all?
They did. They said basically it's fuel for fire. And also, not only that, but when it's burning so quickly, and especially newspapers from what I've talked to with other firefighters, it smolders. So it's hard for them to find a source sometimes of where the fire is even coming from. And then also because it's burning so quickly, and depending on where it is more exposure for houses nearby, which obviously can cause an even larger problem.
Sure, sure. Dr. Rodriguez, that's really the key part in this task force is certainly the dangers presented to a person with hoarding disorder themselves, but there are also dangers presented to the neighborhood. But let's talk about living in a home with an excess of stuff, and in a lot of cases, an excess of poorly cared for animals and that kind of thing. What dangers does this disorder present to the person who is living with it?
Mm-hmm. It presents a lot of dangers, and I just first of all want to commend Sarah for raising this in her story, and for the police chief to really getting the word out and advocating for these kind of resources, which are incredibly valuable to have a place where patient for individuals to get connected to the care they need, but also have the code enforcement piece, because as you're highlighting, this isn't something that just affects that individual. It really affects the communities, and I think what the piece that gets lost is how dangerous it is for first responders who are just doing their line of duty. And it's devastating when one of these, you know, brave individuals loses their life in the service of helping others.
Dr. Rodriguez, if you could consult with the fire department here in San Antonio on how to best mm-hmm. put this task force together, what would you mm-hmm. advise?
Yeah. Well, there's actually wonderful resources in terms of the International OCD Foundation. They have a website that's all about hoarding disorder, and there's wonderful resources there about how to put together a task force. Christina Bratanois has written a book. She's a school of social work on how to do these integrated teams that require social work input, adult protective services, firefighting, code enforcement. It really takes a village with these kinds of things. And I just really commend the fire department for getting the conversation going and really mobilizing these efforts.
So specifically, aside from the obvious fire danger, which presents risk to firefighters and, as Sarah mentioned, EMS, people trying to get in and help somebody. What other sort of health concerns outside of just having hoarding disorder are associated with hoarding disorder?
Yeah. So hoarding disorder has big relevance to public health, not only because of the fire hazard, but also because of the destruction of property. So just the mere weight of the stacks can warp the floorboards. It also creates health hazards, so a lot of dust and in the home for the individual, as well as pest infestations as well. So if in terms of clinical work or our efforts to declutter homes, if there are pest infestations, then that needs to be addressed first. You mentioned earlier animal hoarding, so that is not considered part of hoarding disorder. Typically, animal hoarding, you have a degree of severe mental illness, and when I see that, that is really a cry for help for an individual to have psychiatric evaluation, because oftentimes they want to help and care for the animals, but they just don't see the connection between what they're doing is actually harming their pets.
Okay, do you have questions? Give us a call. Do you have experiences to share? 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org or add us on Twitter at @tprsource. And we did just get an email asking, when I was growing up, my father had a tendency to collect things. And as he got older and dementia started to set in, things escalated to a level they considered hoarding. Can dementia exacerbate this, Dr. Rodriguez?
So if somebody is not able to part with possessions or take care of their home because of a neurocognitive disorder like dementia or Alzheimer's, that is not considered part of hoarding disorder because it's due to another medical condition. And so the best thing to do in those cases is to consult with a neurologist for treatment and care. And in that case, sometimes the loved ones need to help to organize in that case for somebody who has dementia.
So what I'm hearing from you is that not everyone who hoards has hoarding disorder.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. So I see clutter as fever, And you really need to sort of dig a little bit deeper to understand what is the underlying cause of why somebody has fever. There's a lot of reasons why people have fever. There's a lot of reasons why people have clutter. But if they are diagnosed with hoarding disorder, there are treatments that can help. There's cognitive behavioral therapy. There's medications that can be helpful. And so, there is hope, for some that have a medical condition, treating the underlying medical condition, or for those sometimes who are just not diagnosed with another mental condition, that can be very helpful.
Okay, we have another email for you from Alicia asking, how often does grief play a role in someone's hoarding behavior?
Mm-hmm. When we feel down, depressed, and especially in the setting of grief of a loved one, there just really isn't that desire and motivation to take care of ourselves, let alone our surroundings. And so that, again, is not considered part of hoarding disorder because it's better explained by feeling down and blue. There is something called complicated grief, and so when you're having this continued sadness that persists beyond 6 months, let's say, then that is something where you could go to the doctor and, get help, treatments, and medication. For some people who have hoarding disorder, the death of a loved one really complicates things because then they feel very attached to all those items. And when the person passes, oftentimes it can bring all those items into the home and can make their hoarding disorder even worse.
So having another reporter in the studio is kind of cool because sometimes they want to ask questions too. Sarah Klein
yes.
is a City Hall reporter for the San Antonio Express News. What's on your mind?
Okay, so I was wondering, with the task force, obviously they're planning on getting different city departments involved, but how important is it that family members are involved too? Because I know there's been plenty of times where I've shown up at a scene, and from the outside, the home looks almost pristine, and you don't realize mm-hmm. until you go inside. Is it possible for this task force to identify those people without the help of a family member?
This gets into some of the more legal aspects of hoarding disorder. So people have a right to keep their items, right? And only when it sort of crosses the line into code violation in the home or into the safety of themselves and other people, is the intervention part warranted? And so sometimes there's sub-threshold cases. So I would say no. If somebody is not having one of those criteria, then they shouldn't go into the home.
All right, we have a call we'd like to take right now. Sarah is on the line, has a question for Dr. Rodriguez. Sarah, what's on your mind?
Well, I actually had a comment. We purchased a home about 2 years ago, and we are still dealing with the previous owner's hoarding. Bags and bags of egg crates or Christmas cookie tins, rolls of wrapping paper that have like a couple of inches on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list is endless of what we have to still try to get rid of. Mm. I've never seen so much stuff.
Yeah.
Mostly it's family members, right, that have to deal with that kind of thing. But in this case, it's
yeah.
a perfect stranger that sort of walked into a situation they didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right, and I'm sorry that's a very, very stressful situation.
All right. If you'd like to call and add to the conversation, 210-614-8980, that is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to take a quick break now to remind you that we are in the middle of the TPR Fall Pledge Drive, and your financial support is vital to keeping real, reliable programming like The Source on the air. Please call 1-800-622-8977 to pledge today, right now, or give online at tpr.org. Your usual host, David Martin Davies, is in New York this week to accept the prestigious Edward R. Murrow National Award for his news documentary on sex trafficking. The Source is committed to starting conversations about what's being done to make our city a better place. Here's David Martin Davies with the story of one episode that sparked real, meaningful change.
This is David Martin Davies, and I want to ask you to support your public radio station and support The Source, because when you do, you're making a difference. Your support does impact the world, and I have proof. Last December, there was some pro-Nazi vandalism at the San Antonio Holocaust Museum. Someone painted the words fake news in hashtag MAGA. It happened just weeks after the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. So we decided to do a source called What Can the Holocaust Teach Us About Resistance? And we wanted to help promote and raise awareness about events in San Antonio that month for Holocaust remembrance. One of our guests was Ellen Olivetes, the director of the Holocaust Memorial Museum of San Antonio. She told us that these types of vandalism, attacks, and hate speech, it's happening more and more often.
There are scholars that have examined the stages of genocide, and they have created Genocide Watch around the globe. And for the first time, America is on that list.
Another guest, Varda Ratner, is a second-generation Holocaust survivor. She said a problem is that Texas school children are not learning about the Holocaust.
Several states are now mandating Holocaust education, more in-depth Holocaust education in the public schools. And I'm actually involved with a small group of people who have come together trying to get that kind of mandate here in Texas. So we would love to see more Holocaust education in the public schools.
One of our listeners called in and wanted to know more about that. That was Texas State Senator Jose Menendez.
Eye-opening. I know. I sometimes think that this has to be such isolated, just ignorance and hatred in a few people. But to hear that some states, I want to know more about the legislation that other states have introduced for Holocaust education. And I want to know if Texas has anything going? If not, this is timeliness. We just started legislative session, and if other states have some model legislation, maybe we can introduce something.
Senator Menendez filed a bill requiring Holocaust Remembrance Week in Texas public schools. It passed unanimously in the state House and Senate. Governor Greg Abbott signed it into law. On The Source, we talk about community building and bringing people together, and your support made that happen. Also, to close the circle here, to close the loop on this, to the person who made that Nazi graffiti, you may have thought that you were being so clever with your hate, but we're not having it. We have a voice and a platform, and we're going to use it to fight for what's right. And that's why support for public radio matters.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie in for David Martin Davies, who is getting that prestigious Edward R. Murrow Award this week. And we are all really, really proud of him. We are talking about hoarding and hoarding disorder today. It became part of pop culture. Sarah Klein, who's joining me in the studio, City Hall reporter with the San Antonio Express News, with the show Hoarders, which it's always good to raise awareness about something, but it's, also not necessarily a good thing when you have a not very nuanced look at a real disorder. But you mentioned that around the time that show started becoming popular, that cities started passing ordinances related to hoarding. Tell me more about that.
Well, to start, hoarders, I think, people didn't realize how bad it was, and then they see the show, and they think it's like... It's not common, even though studies show otherwise that it happens all over. But so right around that time, Houston actually passed probably, it says, the nation's first big city ordinance specifically targeting hoarding. And so they were allowing police to inspect apartments that received multiple hoarding complaints. And then they could refer that person to mental health services, and they could also fine them up to $500.
That's really interesting. Dr. Rodriguez, Director of Hoarding Disorders Research Program at Stanford University, is it helpful to have a sort of pop cultural moment for a disorder like the one you're researching, like the show Hoarders? Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, there's obviously pros and cons of those kinds of shows, which you've highlighted. But I think what it shows is how much it impacts the individual and their families. And, you know, there have been really terrific partnerships. Jesse Edsel Vetter has created a really amazing partnership with the Metropolitan Boston Housing Partnership. And it would be really great if the fire chief and others on the task force wanted to look more into it. And they do intensive case management. They include cognitive behavioral therapy, and they work really closely with the tenants in trying to build that trusting relationship in order to be able to make progress.
All right. So our number here is 210-614-8980. If you'd like to share some experiences or ask some questions about hoarding disorder, that's the number. That's how you do it. And we are joined now on the phone by Dave. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah, I married into a family, and it turned out that the patriarch of the family was a hoarder, and then now it seems like all three of the children are hoarders. Can it be a learned issue, or is it definitely a mental disorder?
So what I would say is that, you know, we're just starting to learn more about hoarding disorder. And, you know, it definitely tends to run in families. And, you know, these kinds of things sometimes are part genetics and part environment. What I would say is, you know, if you're raised in a home in which there is constant clutter, it's difficult for you to understand how to organize and how to think about the world in that way. So certainly having a model for that is helpful. Great people to turn to are Leisher and Beckshuer. They're part of this mutual support consulting, and they are very open about the struggles that Lee has had with hoarding disorder, and really wanting to you know, describe how people can you know, find ways to have you know, caring and warm support, and that starts also with language, using the, you know, good language for what hoarding disorder is.
When you talk about warm support, we have a question here about family support. How important is that in addressing this issue for a loved one who is sort of trapped in a house that is full of stuff?
Yeah. So I think, you know, my heart reaches out for family members of individuals with hoarding disorder because, you know, most times they're just extremely frustrated. They've tried their best to help, and, you know, they encounter resistance. And yet they see how much they're struggling. So the International OCD Foundation has some really nice tips on what families can do to help, including, you know, just sort of stepping back and examining the things that you can control. For a family, that's how they inadvertently may be contributing to hoarding problems, like saving newspapers, you know, getting storage spaces. So those are things that can be contributing. So thinking about those. And the other is, you know, working on ways to improve communication and respecting the person with hoarding disorders, real attachments to possessions, and thinking about it as something, you know, like a heart attack. You wouldn't say to somebody who has a heart attack, like, go and help yourself. You would want them to go to a doctor and get treatment and help. And this is what we're talking about.
You mentioned earlier in the hour about how when you approach somebody with hoarding disorder with sort of respect and treat their belongings with respect, it really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, another way I sort of have for people to think of, you know, kind of a thought experiment is, you know, imagine that, you know, I put a bunch of antique treasures in the middle of your home and they were taking up a lot of space. And then I came in with a trash bag and said, you know, you have too many ancient treasures in here. What do you want to throw away? You know, you would want to hang on to those, like, ancient artifacts. They're really exciting, and you see them as very valuable.
So one thing that came up in a lot of the reading that I did is that one of the ways to determine, and one of the things the San Antonio Fire Department wants to do is determine who may be suffering from this disorder is if people have, say, a bathroom that they can't use as a bathroom, or a kitchen that they can't use as a kitchen because it's full of stuff, that is part of the sort of diagnostic criteria. Is that still true?
Yes, if they cannot use the rooms in their home for their intended purpose, if they can't go to the bathroom, then that, along with difficulty parting with possessions, is part of the hoarding disorder diagnosis.
Sarah, you mentioned in your article, Sarah Klein with the San Antonio Express News, that the fire department had mentioned someone who had a house that looked fine, but had to go to the Y to take showers in the morning because they couldn't use their bathroom as a bathroom.
Yeah, actually, a psychology professor had mentioned that. But and she was saying he came to work every day, you know, dressed nice. And sometimes there's the littlest signs where all of a sudden he was showering at the Y every day because he couldn't use his bathroom. And I actually was looking at another task force in Philadelphia, and they had some benchmarks of some things that might alert you that maybe you're hoarding. And some of them were if you don't have 3-foot wide pathways, if your piles of stuff are more than 4 feet, if you can't get through doorways, if it's too close to heaters, and if you're not taking out the trash, maybe those are some signs. I don't know if there's other signs that you or I could pick up on a stranger, and I'm curious what Dr. Rodriguez has to say about that or if there's anything we could look for.
All right, Dr. Rodriguez.
Yeah, so I think, one of the challenges is it's difficult, like you're saying. You know, sometimes people can, really present very well. But some clues can be if all of a sudden you're not being invited to somebody's home, like they always, you know, want to come see your house. That can be sometimes a sign. Sometimes individuals with this propensity of not wanting to be without something, they can tend to carry around a lot of items with them. So they might have a big bag, or they may have like one of those grocery carts full of items. That can be another sign. But at the end of the day, it's really a diagnosis that needs to be done by a doctor.
All right, let's go to the phone again. Our phone number, 210-614-8980. Cole is on the line. What's on your mind, Cole?
Yes, I have a rather humorous story which will console people who perhaps are hoarders. When I grew up, I visited my father's sister in West Texas every summer. She had a very tiny bathroom closet that the bathroom part could not be used. However, I went in there and I would hide because it was full of books and I loved to read. So just a little humorous memory on the side of those who do hoard and are having a hard time stopping. Maybe there is a benefit after all of hoarding.
At least for the little ones who like to have lots of books and magazines to read, perhaps things to play with. Thank you so much, Cole, for calling. You're listening to our show on hoarding, and we will talk about treatments. We will talk about if insurance will pay for any of this straight ahead and much more. Give us a call. Join the conversation. 210-614-8980. That's 210-614-8980, or you can email us and you can tweet us at TPR Source on Twitter. The Source continues right after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health. The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need. Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie. And for David Martin Davies, we're talking about hoarding disorder. We're joined by Dr. Carolyn Rodriguez, who's director of the Hoarding Disorders Research Program at Stanford University, and Sarah Klein, City Hall reporter for the San Antonio Express News, who's covered the task force that the city is putting together for hoarding. Ultimately, do you know any more details than, say, I do about what this task force might ultimately look like.
I wish I did. Like I said, when I talked to them last about it, which was in September, they were still figuring it out, still getting figuring out which departments they wanted involved in this. It's like I said at the beginning, it's not just the firefighters. And it sounds like it can't be, especially from everything Dr. Rodriguez has said, too. It's a team effort. So they're looking at that. However, I did want to say that, you know, there's other task forces. So I think they're looking at that. The International OCD Foundation reported that the first task force was actually created in 1989. And since then, there's at least 75 throughout the country. So it's still in the making. Like I said, the chief said he hopes to have it up and running by 2020.
So when something is new to the DSM, like hoarding disorder is, Dr. Rodriguez, is it difficult to get insurance to cover therapy, treatment, any of the other things that a person who's living with this might need?
It's actually, you know, a tremendous benefit to be able to have it be something codable for the DSM-5 and the ICD series, because it's it gives a name to something that people have been struggling with, and it also fosters research. We're really passionate about trying to find effective treatments, both therapy and medications for those people who don't want to take medications for therapy. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, there is hope out there, and identifying these issues and getting connected to care is important.
So if you are a person who loves someone you suspect is struggling with hoarding disorder, or perhaps you yourself look around the house and say, this is not great, I need to talk to somebody, where do you start?
So I would start at the International OCD Foundation. There's a hoarding disorder webpage, and they actually have a searchable directory for treatment and care. They have more information there about medications, about different kind of treatments, resources. And so I think, you know, arming yourself with education and finding out a little bit more about it for yourself and your loved one is really helpful. As well, there's like self-help books. I think Buried in Treasures has a nice title in talking about what we've been describing, that these things are really powerful, you know, attachments that people have that people can read through. Or in terms of a task force, they can support group treatment, that there is a manual that Lee Scherer provides through the mutual support counseling.
All right, one more time to the phones. Nancy joins us now. You have a question for Dr. Rodriguez?
I do. Hi. I have a family member who I have a concern about who tends to do this hoarding, and the bigger concern I have is the money management. She's always shopping at Goodwill, and so there's a compulsive shopping disorder, I think, coupled with the hoarding disorder. Is that common?
Yes. Although excessive acquiring is not part of the diagnosis of hoarding disorder, a majority of people have this acquiring component. It wasn't all, so that's why it didn't make it as part of the criteria. And so if you're noticing that is, you know, if that's really impacting her ability to take care of herself and to live, then that's something that that merits attention and care.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. So where do we go next in the research of this disorder? What do you want to know? What do we all need to know?
Yeah. Well, I'm very interested in what causes this attachment. What do we know about the brain? And can we then have treatments that target those areas? I'm also interested in augmenting current therapies that are helpful and working. I mentioned Buried in Treasures. It's a group, a workshop that can be offered free in the community or with in partnership of Adult Protective Services or other services. And we're testing now whether having somebody come in home, so 20 hours of in-home uncluttering, can help individuals that are suffering with hoarding disorder.
Any final questions, Sarah Klein, before we...
Yeah, actually, I do have one. I know we talked about the environment and how some races might hoard more, that kind of stuff. But something that the chief had said that I thought was interesting was he had said, you know, sometimes it's behavioral, and then sometimes, quote unquote, it's spirit of poverty where they want to get everything. Has there been any studies done that show that maybe impoverished areas, people in those areas hoard more than others?
Yeah, I was actually reading about this the other day, and some of the early work that Randy Foss had written about, there wasn't really any evidence to support that material deprivation, as he calls it, that like coming from very poor backgrounds is the origin of hoarding disorder. Mm-hmm. But again, it's the tip of the iceberg, and I would be really curious to explore that further.
All right. Thank you very much. So hoarding, that's where we are. Dr. Carol Rodriguez joins us now. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
I just want to thank you, Bonnie, for having this terrific topic. It's sobering to think about people who've lost their lives because of mental illness and first responders. But it's important to have shows like this and have individuals like Sarah out there writing about this, because that's the only way we can get people into care and have cities and governments really supporting treatment in these efforts.
And as I understand it, Sarah, Chief Hood says that the task force is going to be up and running by 2020. All right. Fantastic. You have been listening to The Source right here on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie. I've been filling in for David Martin Davies, but he will be back with his shiny Murrow tomorrow. So we can't wait for that.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Rospiedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.